The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell. Welcome to 1874, the Athletics podcast, all about Aston Villa Football Club, and there's no prizes for guessing what's on the agenda today. Greg's been busy reporting on all the South American madness for the Athletic over the last few days, but Greg, another assignment for you as well last night. Global Greg Evans continues on international duty again. Demoted to the under-21s though, Greg?
Demoted, come off it.
Well, you've gone from seniors to under-21s. So just...
Yeah, well, I was over in Hungary, wasn't I, just last Thursday. That was in between the last podcasts that we did. That was enjoyable. Obviously, the supporters let things down a little bit. The Hungarian ultras were disgraceful, really, the way they behaved. But the game was enjoyable, certainly for me. And yeah, last night it was at MK Dons. Pretty sure I was trying to say to my colleagues, I couldn't remember whether I'd ever been to MK Dons Stadium before. I'm sure I have at some point because I used to cover League One football. But yeah, look, good game for Lee Carsley to get his first win as Bas fans were back in the stadium. And the England under-21s, who are in a bit of a transition at the moment, did quite well, yeah. You know, a result that, look, it was all about the win, wasn't it, for them last night because they're in transition. So yeah. Yeah, a couple of impressive performances as well.
And a Villa representative, a surprise Villa representative on the bench as well. Aaron Ramsey elevated to the under-21 squad. Didn't get on, but even a great experience for him even just being there, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I asked Lee Carsley about that after the game. Doing a big story for the Athletic on both Jacob and Aaron Ramsey this week, so look out for that. Yeah, mixed emotions really for the brothers. It was obviously Jacob got his first call up for the under-21s and then missed the game through COVID. Probably would have played, given that Emil Smith Rowe and Ryan Sessegnon both pulled out late yesterday and Harvey Elliott as well. So, yeah, I would have expected Jacob to have got on. Ironically, Aaron Ramsey comes in and replaces him in the squad effectively. Was one of the only substitutes who didn't get on, but look, he was promoted up from the 19s earlier in the week. So we kind of expected that. But yeah, great experience for him. Looked very happy in the warm-ups, certainly. And I think the two of them are really kicking on now.
Good few weeks for Aaron Ramsey, really, because he's obviously been on the first team bench. Might have been one that we expected to go on loan and hasn't. He's been kept around the place. You know, so you're imagining he could be a regular in the matchday squad, really, the way things are going.
Yeah, I think he probably would have gone on loan if Villa maybe didn't have the injuries to, say, Leon Bailey, Bertrand Traore, obviously Ollie Watkins just coming back, you know, Morgan Sanson in midfield and the COVID issues that affected them for the Brentford game. So Ramsey's sort of, he's always been a central midfielder coming through, but you know, in the younger ages, but now he's progressing and becoming more of a attack-minded player. So it'll be interesting to see where he fits in at Villa now. But I think the reason he was kept on was because he's developing so quickly and because Villa have got a few injuries around the first team, so it didn't really make sense to let him go.
Well, we wish him all the best with the rest of the season. Obviously a great start for him. Let's look at the big story then of the week, Greg, something you've been working on a lot of the week, probably the last 2 or 3 days, I would say. Brazil against Argentina, some of the most ridiculous things I think I've ever seen happen on a football pitch. And for those who aren't aware of what happened, Greg, can you just do a little explainer?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure most...
I say little explainer, I'm not sure you're going to be able to do it.
Yeah, oh, well, look, yet. I mean, this is probably one of the most complex cases of stories I've ever really worked on, certainly on international duty anyway. It was quite incredible what's happened. Look, as we all know, Argentina and Brazil is a huge game anyway. The two teams were playing in the World Cup qualifier, and the game had to be stopped because the health authorities in Brazil claim that 4 Argentina players, two from Villa as we know, 2 from Tottenham, had broken the rules and entering the country by failing to report that they'd been in the UK during the previous 14 days. So the claim from the health authorities is that the players should have entered into immediate quarantine and that they didn't report that they'd previously been in the UK, which, you know, it sounds so complex, doesn't it? Because I think Emi Martinez's quotes kind of say it all, because he said that Villa didn't understand the rules I think if you look at the players' faces on the pitch, clearly they didn't understand what was happening. There was confusion in the Argentinian camp, clearly confusion in the Brazilian camp as well. And a further claim from the Brazilian authorities was that they were not actually able to access the Argentina team hotel in advance of the game, which partly explains why the game was called off after it started. Now, I know the counter argument to that will be, well, the Argentina team were in the stadium in advance of kickoff. Why wasn't it sorted before then? Why wasn't a decision made then? I don't know. I'm trying to find out these answers. I've been working on this story for a couple of days now, and myself and Charlie Eccleshare, the Tottenham Hotspur reporter, have written, you know, the most sort of detailed, in-depth story on The Athletic, trying to explain exactly what had happened in the days leading up to it, during the game, and what had happened since. So yeah, look, it's an incredibly complex case. I think even Christian Perslow came out and said that he was concerned about what had happened and what's happening in the future, and that it was very unnerving for people at Villa. So yeah, it's difficult to put into words, but far away any questions you've got, Dan, and I'll try and answer them for you.
I think everyone's biggest concern, well, first of all, will be the players' well-being and that nothing bad happens to them. But the second thing is obviously the impact it has on Villa's first team games. We know they're not going to play against Chelsea on Saturday at Stamford Bridge, which is obviously a huge blow. You know, you need all the help you can get against Chelsea. They're the best team in the league, in my opinion, at the moment. But does what's happened affect things further with further games?
Yeah, that's the real big issue, isn't it? I mean, when we look at it, Villa have lost their record signing in Buendia, and Martinez, who I class probably as the best goalkeeper in the division at the moment, for a game against Chelsea, for what essentially was only 90 minutes of football away on international duty. Now, Villa allowed the two players to go after discussions with them. Both Buendia and Martinez made it clear that they wanted to represent Argentina. You know, both for different circumstances. You've got Buendia, who's never played for Argentina before, and he's obviously very...
Still
hasn't, and he's very pumped up to play. And you've got Martinez, who has been at a Premier League club in Arsenal for 10, 11 years and not been a number one. And has now finally become a number one for his club at Villa and the number one for the country. So he's very motivated to stay as that number one and go and play these games. And as we know, these Argentina players who have just won the Copa America, very, very passionate about playing for their country. So from their side of things, I can understand. I think Villa understood that why they wanted to go and play, so they let them. The Tottenham side of things is a little bit more complex, a little bit different. Maybe we can go into that later, but Spurs didn't actually give their players, Lo Celso and Romero, permission to go. So they're going to potentially suffer even further consequences when they eventually get back to the club. For Villa, they knew that the two players were going. They were going to play in the two games first, not the third. That was agreed. And then they would come back, they'd miss the Chelsea game, and then they'd be available for the Everton game.
But didn't then the Argentina manager come out and say, well, they are playing all three games?
Well, yeah,
they
for all three. And that was what was clouding, you know, making it more controversial and clouding, you know, the confusion and adding to things. You know, we just didn't understand, but... you know, it was our understanding that they were going to come back after those two games. Villa have been very quiet in all of this. Now they haven't explained what's going on. That's their prerogative, of course. It's totally down to them if they want to keep quiet. I presume that they're struggling to get answers themselves and don't fully know what's going on either. Because look, what you've got to remember is Villa were the only club that came out and said we're allowing these players to go. If you go to a red zone country, you're supposed to quarantine straight away. And when you return from a red zone country, it requires a 10-day quarantine as well. So, I mean, look, you know, as I mentioned at the start of this show, I went to Hungary last week for the England game. And any of our listeners who have travelled recently will share this thought with me. It's an absolute nightmare at the moment, travelling. It really is. I had to do a COVID test prior to leaving England. And from the moment I booked that COVID test, I had to get to Hungary, do the game, and get back within 72 hours, just to avoid any quarantining and things like that, and test, further testing when you came home, and the amount of paperwork that you have to provide to the airlines just to get there, and then the countries when you get in. I mean, it's really, really difficult to travel at the moment, and I feel a little bit for the players as well, because our understanding is that they thought there might be some sort of special dispensation for the for footballers going and playing at elite level. And to answer your question, Dan, which you asked me about 5 minutes ago, of what's going to happen going forward, is that hopefully there will be some sort of exemption for these players now if they are going to travel and represent their countries in the future. But it's still very unclear. It's all left with FIFA, so it's down to them, mate.
I mean, it's an absolute farce that something wasn't put into place for this international break, the first international break of the season. It makes no sense at all. It's almost like, well, we'll see what happens this time, and then if we need to do something next time, we'll do it. It just makes no sense at all. And they've put the players in a dangerous situation. They've put the clubs in a bad situation. No, but Argentina haven't been able to even play that game against Brazil, you know, so they've put the nations in a bad situation and got fixture congestion and pile-up as well. There's all sorts going on. Where are the players now?
So it was our understanding that the players were heading back to Croatia. At the time of recording, we were expecting them to head there. The reason they were going to Croatia was because, as I previously mentioned, if you're coming back to England from a red zone country, you have to quarantine for 10 days. The least worst option was to go to somewhere like Croatia, set up a training camp, so the players can actually do some physical activity.
Is that the four players, the Villa and the Spurs players? Or is it just the Villa players together?
Well, it was definitely the Villa players that were heading there, and the two Tottenham players were understood to be heading there also, as well as Davinson Sanchez, who's a Colombia player and under the same sort of issues because he's coming back from a red zone area. The reason they were going to Croatia was to train there. Let's just try and make this clear. If they were coming back to England, they would have to go straight into a hotel or a quarantine zone. And as you can imagine, in a room, there's not going to be much area to train. That's going to further knock them back. So their solution was to be go to Croatia, train for a little bit, keep active, help speed up the recovery process and keep the players match fit so that they, when they come back to their respective clubs, they're as fit and ready as possible for the following games. Again, another, you know, crazy situation when you think of it. It's just so complex, and just hard to get your head around everything, really.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter. I'm not sure they've got a full understanding of the situation. I certainly didn't. You obviously have. Saying Villa have been too nice. Villa should have refused to let the players go. They think that Villa have got this element of niceness about them as a club, not ruthless enough. Would you go along? I know you've already said that you've explained why the club did it, and I completely agree with that reason, to be honest, but do you understand why people are saying that?
I've seen those suggestions. I think that Villa are moving in... Look, that question really would need an answer from the club, and I'm speaking to Dean Smith tomorrow, so I will put that to him and see what he says, because I'd be interested to hear that as well. My thoughts, and to answer that question, would be Villa are moving in a direction where they're trying to sign elite players who are going to be representing their countries. When they sign these elite players, they will know that the players want to play for their countries as well. Some might not. Some in Buendia and Martinez's case, they certainly do. And they want to keep these players happy at the same time as allowing them to fulfil their career ambitions. That would be my answer if I was a politician. Now I need to answer. I need to get Dean Smith and Villa's take on it to see if there's any anything else to add to it. But that's, I presume, what he will say too. Just one final point, Dan, before we move on, and we will move on after that. Well, I hope I've explained that situation well enough.
I understood it, so that's a good start. I would say that's a good barometer.
that's good to know. What I would say though is definitely, if you're interested in that story and you want to know the reasons why, genuinely go and read that, because me and Charlie, the Tottenham writer, spent a long time putting it together, and And it is the definitive read out there explaining why. So go and have a read on that.
Well, as Greg said, there's plenty of stuff around this story on The Athletic at the moment. The impact that it is on Spurs, the impact that there is about Villa. Greg's been doing plenty for the website. So look out for pieces from Greg, Jack Pitbrook, Ed Mallion and Charlie Eccleshare on the background of this and why it matters so much to Argentina in general. Hint, it may be Messi's last World Cup. Hopefully you'll be able to learn more about what's coming next as well, if Greg hasn't explained it all to you on this podcast so far. If you do want to read that stuff and you're not subscribed to The Athletic, at the moment The Athletic are offering a 33% discount on new subscriptions, so you'll get all the great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all the podcasts, including this one. To take advantage of that offer, just go to theathletic.com/villapod and you'll get a third off your new subscription. That's theathletic.com/villapod.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's move away from airports and COVID, Greg. Let's talk about actual football. Villa have got a tough task. Saturday tea time, Stamford Bridge. No Martinez, no Buendia, as we've just discussed. Which one do you think is going to be the bigger miss?
I do rate Jed Steer as a goalkeeper, and I think he will come in and be a reliable stopper for Villa. But we know that he's not at the level of as Martinez. And will there be any nerves? Will there be a little bit of uncertainty from the defenders? Perhaps. If you're asking me a direct question out of the two, I think Villa will miss Martinez more. I'd hope that some of the attacking players are back so that Buendia isn't missed too much. If the same squad is available as the Brentford game, then I think Buendia's absence is going to be felt as well, because there were so many absentees. But we'll find out later in the week who's available for Villa.
I mean, you'd expect Ollie Watkins to be back, wouldn't you?
I mean, yeah, you think so. It's just we haven't had any updates from the manager. It's been very quiet from Villa, so we don't know if there's been any setbacks in training this week, how the COVID outbreak, so to speak, has affected some of the others potentially, whether Sanson's back, how fit Jacob Ramsey is after missing a week of training with COVID.
Bailey as well.
Bailey, still waiting for Bertrand Traore. Yeah, we spoke about the disruption, didn't we, last week? So, the sooner Villa get these players back, the better, because I think they can be a real force once they've got the full team available to them.
I mean, McGinn played for Scotland on Tuesday night, so that was good news. So we assume he'll be back.
Yeah.
He's always good to have back.
Yeah, really positive news and a nice moment for him. His brother represented Scotland as well with him. I suppose I should have known this, but like when I seen the two of them pictured together, it was almost like a double take when McGinn posted a picture on his Twitter. I've spoken to him about his brothers many times before. I just don't think I've ever actually seen them. So when I seen them together, it was quite funny, to be fair.
Yeah, nice moment to see McGinn getting to play with his brother at international level, things like that. Obviously really, really good for morale. Chelsea got a few injuries as well. We don't know anything confirmed, but they've got a few things going on as well. But I think they might be okay with their squad.
I think their squad's not bad, is it, mate? I think they've got a few options to turn to if they ever get injuries.
Yeah, Lukaku's one that's cropped up in the international break, isn't it, as having an injury.
Yeah.
I don't like to wish injury on people, but it'd be quite nice if he didn't play on Saturday against Villa, had a little rest.
Yeah, I mean, look, I watched his first game against Arsenal. He was fantastic. I missed the second game that he played. Because I was doing other work, I think. And Yeah, he's a big threat, isn't he? But Chelsea have just got so many, yeah, so many good players they can turn to. I always think Chelsea look a lot better when Kante plays. Not sure whether...
I think he might have been injury doubt as well, actually.
Yeah. Interesting, yeah. Every time I've been to Stamford Bridge with Villa, they've struggled there. So it's about time they got something from there, but it's going to be very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I can think of a few horror days off the top of my head at Stamford Bridge, none more so than that 8-0 defeat in Paul Lambert's first season. Jesus Christ, we've come a long way since then, haven't we? Do you think Chelsea, that's the toughest game Villa could have, really? I think Chelsea will win the league, personally. I think that their squad depth's an absolute joke. I think Tuchel's a joke. Such a good manager, done such a good job there. It's as tough a ask as you can have on a Saturday tea time, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it's a really tough game. I think the title will be between... Well, I actually think that it could be a really exciting title race. I've tipped Liverpool to win the league. I do fancy them. Yeah, I fancy them if they don't get as many injury setbacks as last season. I think they'll be very, very, very strong. Certainly with Van Dijk back now, I think he makes a huge difference. So, yeah, I think it'll be a really enjoyable title race this year. I think it'll be much closer. As you say, Chelsea, they're just such a good team. The squad depth is ridiculous, and you know they've got young players as well coming through now. Chalobah started the first couple of games of the season, didn't he, out of nowhere, and you just think, wow, you know, if they could blood a few youngsters as well as spending, you know, hundreds of millions on players, that, you know, they're a real force. So it'll be a tough test, but it'll be good for Villa. I think the first three games they were expected to win. Now they go into a game where they're not expected to win, so it might be a different scenario for them.
Yeah, I've done a few podcasts for The Athletic on Chelsea recently and read a few pieces. I think that they're in such an excellent place that they're in for a really exciting season, Chelsea. I just remember Conte's injured as well. Well, Conte went off injured in the last game as well. You know, it'd be nice if they had a full squad to choose from at some point.
That's what I'm trying to say, mate. I think, yeah, we need to check on Konza. The good thing is, Mings obviously played against Andorra, didn't he? So
got himself a sneaky yellow card, didn't he, as well? Get himself back to Bodymore.
Well,
sneaky little yellow against Andorra.
Well, look, you know, he's been struggling.
I see you, Tyra.
I'm not saying anything. He's been struggling with a rib injury, so we knew he'd missed the game in Hungary because he was in a lot of pain then. But hopefully... He'll be paying free by the time Villa play Chelsea. They're going to need him in a game like that. You know, if Lukaku plays, Mings is probably the best Villa defender to handle him in terms of his physicality, I think. They're going to need him. Hopefully Konza's available, but if not, I'm sure Twanzebe will come in and fill in nicely.
Do you think if Konza is available, you could see either him revert to right back and Axel stays inside, or Axel play right back, make it a bit more? Because Villa beat Chelsea doing that, didn't they, in the last game of the season, last season?
Yeah, I would like to see that. That's something that I thought really worked really well last season, and you know, I've said that in many podcasts. I think for these really big games, and as you say, Dan, it doesn't get much bigger than away at Chelsea. Why not put Konza there, because he showed that he can do that and just tighten things up a little bit. You just got to make sure you get the balance right. Remember last season, Jack was there and causing lots of problems going forward. And obviously Ollie Watkins was in good form. Just got to get the right balance.
Yeah. No, it would really be really good. I know I've already mentioned it, but it'd be really good to see Leon Bailey against Chelsea, because I really do think he's going to be the go-to guy in terms of getting the ball to him like Jack was for Villa. I just think Leon Bailey's going to be a sensational player for us, and I want to see him sooner rather than later.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
We did ask for some questions on Twitter, and we got quite a lot, to be fair, Greg. There's a lot of questions to get through here, so we'll try and get through as many as we can in this segment now. The first one's from American Villain. There's been a lot of criticism of Smith lacking a style of play and tactics Can you all discuss this and his preferred style?
Yeah, I don't think he has a preferred style anymore. That when he first joined Villa, he wanted to pass it out from the back. That became very clear. Villa signed Tom Heaton as a goalkeeper in Dean Smith's first full season. And I remember Neil Cutler, the goalkeeping coach, saying how they had to train Tom Heaton to pass it out from the back because he wasn't used to doing that at Burnley. So Smith wanted to progressively move the ball forward, dominate possession for long periods, but then he's changed over times. He's changed from then a. He's moved to a pressing team at times. When you remember the first season, again back in the Premier League, I remember watching the front three players. They used to press quite quickly and intensively, and then that changed. Then he moved to more of a counter-attacking team for a certain period. And I don't think Villa have a certain style of play. The word identity gets thrown about a lot, but I think if you're a team that's performing well and are mid-table in the Premier League, you don't necessarily need an identity if you're getting
the
results.
You change, don't you, on a game-to-game basis with things?
Yeah, and look, there are football consultants and ex-football experts and consultants out there who say that every team should have a style of play, and if a team has a style of play and develops that over a 3-4-5 year period, that's where the most success will be gained. But it's just not that way in England. Style of play is not as important. And I just think what Dean Smith's doing, he's getting enough results. He's okay for Villa, and yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it?
If you have a set style of play, you went out and played the same tactics every single week, you're going to get found out.
Clubs are going to realise how to
work against it. And if you did the same thing every single week, you can't have a set way of playing. You have to adapt on a game-by-game basis.
Of course you don't. But, I mean, you can have a style of play. I totally get that, because Man City, for example, have a style of play. They will change their their formation slightly. They will change little bits that Pep Guardiola sees. Have a very clear style of play, which pretty much ever since Abu Dhabi took over them, first obviously Mancini, that there was a style of play developing there, then Pellegrini came in, similar style of play, and it was all leading towards Pep Guardiola, and now they have a very, very clear style of play. But and Liverpool have had it under Jurgen Klopp, but there aren't too many other teams that have
elite teams.
We're mentioning two elite teams there. I suppose if you look slightly down a little bit, you've got Brentford, they play a similar way. Brighton like to play a certain way. But the issue you have in the Premier League is that a Premier League a manager has probably 16 to 17 months on average as a head coach or a manager. So things change, and then when a new manager comes in, he wants to implement a certain way. So that's why I go back to football experts and consultants. They say that the best run teams have a style of play, but it never changes when the manager changes. We're in a bit of an unusual situation with Villa, because Dean Smith's now one of the longest serving managers in the Premier League, which is incredible, really. I suppose you look at Burnley, they've got a style of play, haven't they? It's not what Villa fans would like, but they do have a very clear style of play. For Villa, I think they're still just developing it.
It's about being adaptable as well. Think about after lockdown, Dean Smith changed the way Villa defended. There's so many different things. It's not just style of play. There's the way you defend. There's the way you press. The way you are on and off the ball. There's so many different things. It's not just about a style of play. And the one thing I would say is, when Villa were in the Championship and playing against Brentford, everyone was raving about Dean Smith's style of play when he was at Brentford, saying this is the kind of thing we want. This is what we're missing. And now we've got it. Now, I'm very happy with what we're doing and where we're going. But on a similar vein, Richard Bowden's asked, what does Dino have to do to switch the haters off? Because there's whoever's in charge, you go on social media, there's going to be some people that don't like him, don't like what he's doing, disagree with everything. It's just the way of the world now, isn't it?
Right, so yeah, it's interesting really, because I thought this was just Villa fans. Now, I thought it was just Villa fans getting on, occasionally getting on Smith's back. And look, it's 100%, not everybody. It's a small minority, I think, and a vocal few on Twitter every now and then. But I put a tweet out a couple of weeks back when I was watching the Leicester game, and I was confused because I didn't understand why Iheanacho wasn't starting, because I think he had a great end to last season. And I was really confused that he wasn't starting.
I can tell you why I wasn't starting, Greg, because I put him in my fantasy football.
Well, I had him in there as well. That was part of the reason why I put it out there. But I got lots of replies from Leicester fans saying, Brendan Rodgers, clueless, because it's Brendan Rodgers, useless. And I just thought, wow, it must just be every club that have these... few that think their manager just isn't quite good enough. And I think, I've said this time and time again, and I'll stick by it. Dean Smith's doing a really, really good job at Villa. He's met every single brief in every single season. So get me a Villa fan who tells me that they don't want their manager to achieve something and progress the club every single season. He got the club promoted in the first season, which is what he was asked to do. He kept them up in the second season, which is what he was asked to do. He got them into mid-table last season, which is what he was asked to do. Progression every single season. That's probably his buzzword, isn't it, Dean Smith? Progression. Loves it. And he's getting it this season. The pressure is on him because he's going to have to progress again. He's going to have to get Villa into the top half of the table to say that he's improved this team again. And to be honest, I'd back him to do it.
Yeah, same. I'd like to get someone on this podcast who was anti Dean Smith. Actually,
we should try that definitely, and try and really get into the reasons why. Because I would genuinely love to know what they think is so bad about him.
It might be difficult to get someone on who's podcast efficient. I would say some of the stuff you say on Twitter is an absolute joke. But if you're a reasonable person and you are anti Dean Smith, let us know in the comments or on Twitter. And we'll get you on and we'll try and have a chat. I'd be really interested to do that.
Football is so, it's for supporters, it's a lot of them, it's week to week, isn't it? It's if Villa lose one week, then they're looking at why and they're trying to pick the reasons out why. Whereas if you have a more sensible approach and look at it over the course of a season and analyse the seasons, then nobody in their right mind surely and criticise Dean Smith.
Mm. I think we're on the same page with Dean. I think we both rate him and we both respect what he's done for the football club enormously. Let's move on to Sean Reynolds then. Injuries and form has meant Ashley Young has had more game time than most of us thought. Does he start when everyone's fit, Greg?
Well, if you'd have asked me that at the start of the season, I would have said no. I thought he would be a player that would come in and fill in from time to time, perhaps come off the bench and help Villa see out games and just give a bit of leadership and guidance. I think we might see a little bit more of him, to be honest. I don't think he's had the best of games in the three games that he's played, but I think he's done all right. And I think Smith likes that. Smith likes him in there. So, yeah, I think we'll see more of him.
Leadership, that's the biggest thing, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
I imagine he trains very well as well. Can you ask Dean tomorrow about how he's been in training?
He does, he trains very well. Look, they've nicknamed him Young Ashley there because they think that, they can't believe he's 36 years old. He's very still very competitive in training, sets very high example, sets very high standards, as does Danny Ings. So, yeah, the new signings are really helping Villa.
I like having a player that's always in the ref's ear on the pitch. I liked that when we signed John Terror, and I like it about Ashley Young. Always chatting to the ref, always having a little pop at the ref all the way through the game. I don't know why, but I really like that.
Yeah.
I just like having a player that does that. Yeah. Like, it's almost like they're trying to ref the game a little bit and influence things. I like having that on my team.
Yeah, it's useful, very useful. I don't think Young's best position is in the midfield attacking areas anymore. I think he's a better defender. But if you've got Mings, who's very vocal, and let's get this right, Mings is not a player that gets in the referee's ear. He's very, very respectful on the pitch. He's more of an encourager for his teammates than someone who's hammering into people. Young is more of a cheeky, annoying type. if you're an official, you would be sick to death of his voice. But as you say, a good thing for Villa.
One from Stu Mortz here. Are there any major plans to do work on Villa Park in the pipeline? Will the ground be extended or capacity increased?
Yeah, in terms of the extension and capacity, I'm not too sure that's on the immediate horizon. I'll ask the question because I know it's certainly in the thoughts. There's actually a lot of work that's going on in and around Villa Park. It's become not a dated stadium, but there are lots of little improvements that need to be made. Now, if you'd have gone to Old Trafford 4 or 5 years ago, it was almost falling apart in various areas. And you thought, wow, this is, you know, the theatre of dreams, as they call it. And it just needed a lick of paint. And when these owners, Nassif Suarez and Wes Edens, came in, they realised that around Villa Park, there were lots of things that needed changing and improving and upgrading and updating. And that's just little minor things that supporters might not necessarily see inside the corridors of Villa Park and various
areas. The hospitality's changed, hasn't it, quite a lot?
Yeah, and you know, they've done a lot. That was one of the areas they focused on. But there's so many little things that are going on to pull towards a bigger picture. So Villa have got big aspirations of making that stadium a world-class stadium. The fact that they attracted Foo Fighters to the stadium is a big plus point for them.
Big signing.
I mean, look, you know, we're laughing and saying it tongue-in-cheek, but it is a big deal, you know. Getting these events at the stadium is a big deal for the commercial team at the club. And there are improvements at making around the stadium. As for the extension and capacity, I don't quite know yet, but I'll ask the question.
I know that there are some plans.
The plans are in place, the North Stand.
There's some plans. I know also that there were some plans already there from a previous regime when the new regime arrived, and apparently they were an absolute disgrace. Those plans.
Yeah, but I mean,
what they've got now, I've heard that it's very future proof. What they're looking at the moment, anything they do is going to be top of the range in 10 years' time. Still, that's how far forward they're looking. I will say as well that I was at Villa Park a few weeks before the season started, and Tails took me into the directors' club, and they'd done some nice work in the corporate hospitality around there. It looked really, really smart. So some big changes. So they are doing stuff. I think they realised that they did have to catch up quite a lot. Like you say, things that you wouldn't necessarily notice on a match day, but there was a lot of things around the ground that were dated. I mean, I don't want to upset our producer, but I saw some stuff around St James's Park and their corporate hospitality and the ground falling apart the other week. And bloody hell, thank God we're not Newcastle. Just the main word there, the main takeaway is just absolute neglect. What is going on? Horrible. But yeah, don't upset the producer too much. Paul Tipton, regular listener, Paul, always coming up on Twitter and on The Athletic. So thank you very much, Paul. Hypothetically, if Amazon Prime wanted an all or nothing series featuring Villa next season, would you be for or against it, and why, Greg?
Yeah, I'd be up for it. I think that purely from a journalistic point of view, we don't get much access at Villa anymore, so we don't really see too many things, you know, behind the scenes, the ins and outs of what goes on. Other clubs are much more open to that. Villa aren't. They're a closed book these days, so I'd be all up for watching it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Arsenal one next season already. They're not going to call it all or nothing, though. They're just going to call it nothing, I think.
You love a little dig at Arsenal, don't you?
Well, I mean, they're not going to be winning all, are they? So I think it's just going to, I honestly think they're in massive trouble this season. I think it could even end up getting cancelled, because I think the whole thing could just end up being a complete embarrassment to the club. I just think what a great one to pick for this season, Arsenal. I'm looking forward to that. They're cropping up more the football documentaries. I noticed there's a Feyenoord one on Disney Plus that's just come out as well. I'm going to make sure I watch that, because I love that kind of thing. I'd be up for it as well. I think it would be very, very interesting. It's always more interesting when it's your club. Leeds have done stuff, Spurs have done stuff, Man City, Sunderland. Yeah, it'd be great to see Villa involved in something like that. Just imagine the year we went up, if there'd have been a documentary filmed that season, just the dramatic turnaround and how things changed. The manager having a cabbage thrown at him. There's just all sorts going on that season, wasn't there? It would have been an incredible documentary.
Yeah, that really would. I think Atletico Madrid have got one as well from their title-winning season last year, so that should be interesting. I think so. I think I read some yesterday. Michael Calvin wrote a fantastic book on Millwall as well, when he was given basically a season to just, no holes barred access, just, basically was with the team for a season and wrote his findings from that. An excellent book, well worth a read.
There's a good Dortmund documentary as well that I've watched following them around for a season that's really, really interesting because they're a class club, Dortmund. That's probably my favourite one that I've watched. I think that probably does us, Greg. Otherwise, we'll still be recording when Poland-England kicks off tonight. So thank you very much for everyone's questions. Good high standard considering it's Twitter as well. And we've actually held some back as well for future shows because we've got so many. So you might see a few of them in the future. Don't forget that offer on The Athletic at the moment, a third off the subscription when you go to theathletic.com/villapod. Just time then to say thanks to you, Greg. Always a pleasure to talk to you. I know you're a very, very busy boy, Global Greg Evans. I mean, you've talked about Brand Bardell before. I've noticed you on Premier League productions outside Villa Park the other day as well. I don't think this stuff goes unnoticed. I've noticed a change in you recently.
Yeah, well, I'm just learning from the best, aren't I, Dan? So I'm looking forward to Chelsea at the weekend. Will you be there?
No, I'm not going. I'm letting myself down. First league game I've missed this season.
You're not really an away fan, are you? You're not one of them proper fans that goes to all of the games.
Unless it's the Majeski, mate, the home of football. you'll always see me there. But yeah, no, unfortunately, I will not be there on Saturday. But I will be watching on Sky Sports, hoping to try and catch Ronaldo's debut for Man U in some kind of way as well. But yeah, we'll be back next week, won't we, Greg, talking about Villa's 3 points at Stamford Bridge. Thanks ever so much for listening. Take care. Have a good rest of the week. Up the Villa.
The Athletic.